The traditional methodology of historical criticism of the Bible is characterized by its strict separation between oral and written stages in the formation of the biblical text. Critics have applied different sets of methods for two stages. The oral stages has been explored through form criticism or Gattungsgeschichte and partly tradition history, whereas written stages has been investigated by tradition history and source criticism and reduction criticism. Especially in the Pentateuch study, the interest in the oral stages has consistently decreased with the success of the new models that replaced the classical documentary hypothesis. The new models mainly focus on the last stages of the literary formation rather than earlier oral stages, so that the reduction criticism have become the major method. Recently, however, such a strict division between oral and written world has been significantly challenged by the studies of orality and scribal culture by Susan Neidich, David Carr, Persson, van der Toom, and others. In spite of the differences in details, several points can be extracted from their works, which are increasingly gaining support in the current scholarship. First, the basic means of communication in the Asian societies were largely oral. Second, the oral communications and written texts coexisted and mutually influenced each other. Third, the scribal activities were not purely literary, but also much orality was in effect within the scribal mind. Especially the third notion derives from the assumption that the ancient text was Asian texts were often read publicly by the scribes themselves. Therefore, the scribes and such scribes had such a situation in mind already in their writing process. Such a mental state of the scribes is variously described. For example, performance mentality, Susan Neidich, and performative mode of thought, Dorn and Gills, or oral mindset, Persson. Similarly, Gregory Nagy claimed, based on his study of Homeric text, that scribes engage performance-like activity in the very act of writing. The notions have gained consent among the critics, stimulating renewed discussion of orality in biblical texts. Especially in New Testament studies, the so-called performance criticism has become a new trend. Also in the field of Hebrew Bible, increasing interest in oral and performative aspects are observed, especially with regard to the prophetic books, poetic passages, and some narratives in the former prophets. Still, however, investigations from the oral or performative perspective focus mostly on literary units without difficult literary problems. Complicated texts, such as the composite narratives in the Pentateuch with complex history of the redaction, are often excluded from the discussions. This is largely due to the traditional notion that redaction obviously presupposes already written texts and involves literary activities such as revising, combining, restructuring, and so on. Such scribal works are regarded as purely literary. Nevertheless, Nehemiah 8 reports Ezra's public oration of the Torah of Moses, that is probably parts of the current form of the Pentateuch. If Nehemiah 8 reflects a customary Torah reading in the Festival of Booths during the Second Temple period, the Pentateuchal text may have been the most frequently orated text in the official religious settings in Persian Yehud. Therefore, if context of oration or performance may have influenced the scribe's mind during the process of writing process, the Pentateuchal texts possibly have traces of such influences. This paper aims to examine whether such performative orality can be found in the very late stages of redaction of in the formation of the Pentateuch. For this purpose, I will analyze one of the representative composite narratives in the Pentateuch. There is story of Korach in number 16. There are other composite narratives in the Pentateuch that can be discussed in from this perspective, but it would be not possible to fully discuss them in the limited time frame of this presentation. So I will therefore concentrate on a Korach narrative with special attention to some redactional passages that are most relevant to the focus of this paper. Now, so the Korach narrative. The story of rebellion of Korach in number 16 is one of the representative composite narratives in the Pentateuch, according to the broadly admitted reconstruction of the literary history of the chapter. At least three narrative strands are interwoven in it. The first strand is about the rebellion of Dadan and Abiram. Dadan and Abiram, the Reubenites, challenge Moses' political leadership and refuse to enter the promised land. As a punishment, they were swallowed by the earth. The second strand is about the 250 chieftains of Israel. They challenge the religious privilege of Aaron and Moses, and they are commanded to compete with Aaron in the contest of incense offering. At the contest, they are punished to death by the fire from the sanctuary. The last strand is about Korach and the Levites. The Korach layer is not an independent narrative strand, but it is regarded as a redactional layer that added to the two previous strands. The redactor seemed to have combined the two independent narratives and endeavored to make the whole story as the story of Korach and the Levite religious challenge against the priestly prerogative of Aaron. As a result, the two punishments in the previous narratives are imposed to Korach and his congregation. This is number 16. The Dadan and Abiram texts are marked in red, and the 215 chieftains texts are in blue, and the sentences in black are the Korach text added by the later redactor. So you may have an idea how the three different strands were interwoven in that chapter. Now, this is the second half of the chapter. Recent studies of the literary history of the chapter suggest that this redactor was probably from the Zadokite priestly group in Jerusalem in mid or late Persian period. He formulated this composite narrative in order to defend the exclusive priestly authority in the temple ritual against the growing power of Levitical groups, especially in the Temple of Jerusalem. Lein Achenbach defines this redactional piece as theocratic revision, but I would define it as a Zadokite redaction. As a result of this redaction, our text suffers from a number of literary difficulties that disturb modern readers, such as numerous literary themes, redundant repetitions, confusing plots, a strange structure, and so on. From a purely literary perspective, our text is not a coherent unit that can be read reasonably. And therefore, the redaction does not seem to have been a very successful scribal work. The literary difficulties, however, can be understood differently if one assumes a context of oration or performance. A good example may be the redactor's own edition in number 16, verse 8 through 11, which contains Moses' blame of the Levites. The passage was inserted after the instructions about the preparation of contest of incense offering in verses 6 through 7a. Those verses are in blue because it is from 250 chieftains text. But the redactional passage from verse 8, which is in black, awkwardly interrupt the flow of the narrative, harshly rebuking the Levites rather unexpectedly, like this: "Hear now, you Levites. It is too little for you that The God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to allow you to approach him in order to perform the duties of the Lord's tabernacle and to stand before the congregation and serve them. He has allowed you to approach him and all your brother Levites with you, yet you seek the priesthood as well. The preceding parts of the narrative, there's no mention of Levites at all, except the succinct redactional gloss in the end of verse 7. This is too much, you Levites. But the present passage suddenly starts to blame Levites with Moses' blazing anger. On a literary level, such an unexpected shift cannot be read smoothly. However, the verses can be better understood if we imagine that the text was orated or performed by a scribe priest in a religious context in the temple or near the temple of Jerusalem, which are most likely the case. The Levites were probably present among the audience, considering their significant religious function in the Second Temple period. It is also likely that the Korahites were there too, for they were one of the most highly esteemed Levite singers clan from the Mid-Persian period. In such a context, Moses' speech against the Levites might have been actually directed to the Levites in the audience. The orator or scribe performer could easily shift the focus of the narrative to the Levites with some oratory techniques such as facing the Korahites and other Levites, or indicating them with his hand and making a differentiating voice and tone. When the speech was directed to the Levites, the audience's attention also may have been directed to the Levites among them. The shift is made from the past event to in the narrative to the here and now situation. In this way, the verses could have generated an immediacy and vivid dynamics among the audience, which cannot be explained out on a flat literary level. From the ancient Greek oratory to modern performances, audiences have always been one of the most significant part of the performance. Whitney Schinner, therefore, observes that audiences were actively involved in oral performances in the formation of New Testament literature. In our case too, the possible presence of Levites among the audience members may explain the unexpected shift of the narrative. The present passage is also marked by a strong emotional tone of Moses' speech, which could have provoked an emotional empathy with Moses in the audience. Such a manipulation of emotion is a major characteristic of oral performance. In Greco-Roman oration, effective expression and stimulation of emotions were regarded as the most important aspect of the performance. Roman oratory teacher Quintilian, for example, said that even in legal speeches in court, the appeal to the emotion will do more. As Schinner rightly argues, emotion was spurrier to a rational argument to convince the audience. The significance of the emotional reaction is also confirmed by in the biblical oratory tradition as well. Reading the book of the law book of Moses by Shaphan provoked King Joshua's emotional reaction, such as tearing his clothes. Ezra's recitation of Law of Moses equally strikes the audience with grief. Also, Ezra's public prayer caused the audience to weep bitterly. In the case of Baruch's recitation of Jeremiah's scroll at the court of Jehoiakim, no emotional reaction of the audience is harshly blamed as a rejection of the divine will. The audience's emotional reaction were therefore regarded as a result of successful recitations in ancient Judah and Persian Yehud. And this was probably what our scribe or scribe performer mainly intended to achieve. In our text, Moses' anger against the Levites neither firmly rooted in the narrative nor reasonably understood in the narrative. However, A successful recitation or performance could lead the audience to feel empathy with Moses emotionally. And in this way, the orator could effectively achieve his goal, that is, a harsh polemic against the Levites. Such a highly emotional scene continues through the rest of the story, so that the story consists of a series of emotional explosions of the characters. Moses' blame of the Levites is followed by a rebellious and furious speech of Dathan and Abiram, which incurs Moses' anger again. The contest of incense offering, although this was commanded by Moses, kindles Yahweh's anger to demolish the whole congregation. Then Moses and Aaron fell down on their face with frustration and utter the intercessory prayer in a very emotional way. All these discourses express strong and often exaggerated emotions, which consequently produce a rather awkward plot in the narrative. Shina, however, observes that at a performance, a rapid emotional interplay between the characters may dramatically shift the narrative to a climax. Also, in the present form of our narrative, the mounting emotional tension between the three parties, Moses, God, and the congregation of Korach, gives the narrative dynamics that rapidly drives it to the climax, that is, the two dreadful punishments. Notably, the highly emotional discourses that develop the narrative are mostly assigned to the redactor of the narrative. This fact may be another indicator that the redactor may have had a context of oration or performance in his mind in the process of his literary redaction. In a similar vein, the repetition of Moses' instruction of the preparation of the incense contest, which is verses 6-7 and 16-17, may also be explained as a sign of morality. The doublet has been regarded as a redundant element unskillfully generated by the final redactor. Since Perry and Lord's study, however, a repetition of similar or formulaic phrases are considered as the most important characteristic of oral tradition. Also, Susan Neidich claims that repetitions do not always serve as a tedious reminders, but often has critical thematic implications. According to her, repetition is richness in oral communication. In our narrative too, the repeated instruction in verses 16 and 17 provides a thematic unity to the narrative. Immediately following the passage from the Dathan and Abiram, which is the verses 12 to 15, the red text in the middle, the repeated instruction appears as if Moses' reaction to Dathan and Abiram within the Korach congregation. The praise, all your congregation, in verse 16, may give impression that Dathan and Abiram are among the congregation and that Moses is commanding also the Reubenites to prepare the incense offering. If so, the Dathan and Abiram story is incorporated into the redactional frame of the Korach story by this repetition. To be sure, there exists obvious literary break between the verses 15 and 16, but in an oration context, use of same voice and tone of anger throughout these verses could easily give the impression to the audience that the verses are coherent speech unit. In this way, the repetition may have functioned as an effective performative device that produced a thematic unity within the narrative. If the present form of the Korach story has been recited or performed before the audience, what kind of research may have been achieved in its socio-religious context? Recent socio-historical studies of Persian Yehud suggest that during the mid-Persian period, the various groups of second-rank temple workers in Jerusalem, such as singers, gatekeepers, and assistants of ritual, were united as the Levite tribal clan and expanded their power and influence with the support of Persian authority. For the priestly group, therefore, the growing power and influence of the Levites was probably a threat for your priestly authority in the temple. In such a situation, a successful performance of this text had probably brought the Korahite and other Levites a public shame, which may have deprived them of public support in temple politics, and consequently prevent them from challenging the priestly authority. To the rest of the audiences, the oration may have caused fear and respect of the priestly prerogative in the temple ritual. These possible results were perfectly coincide with the religious political interest of the priestly circle in the Jerusalem temple in the Persian period. That is, to establish the hegemony in the temple and the community, suppressing other rival groups. Now I'm turning to a conclusion. In this paper, I examined the possible orality in the Korach redaction, which is usually assigned to the final redactional stage of the formation of the Pentateuch. The examination suggests that the redactional passages cause problems on literary level, yet they make better sense when an oration or performance context is imagined. This observation carries some implications for our understanding of the formation of the text. Firstly, the complex interaction between oral and written rhymes may have persisted through the last phase of the formation of Pentateuchal text. Secondly, the Pentateuchal redactors mainly worked on written texts, but at least for some cases, they had oration or performance context in their mind in the process of redaction. Third, therefore, consideration of such oral aspect could enrich the traditional literary historical study of the Pentateuch with a fresh look on the literary problematic redactional passages. The reconstruction of the oration or performance of our text are only in our imagination for the moment. Yet, a further understanding of the orality in the ancient Near Eastern societies would hopefully minimize the methodological weaknesses and may interest us many further tests in the study of the Pentateuch. Merci de votre attention.